Radio Cavalè, your anarchist radio.
Hello and welcome to Radio Cavalè.
Hello.
I'm Santeria.
Achilles Punks.
And we're Radio Cavalè.
Radio Cavalè.
So today we've got lots of stuff for you, very interesting, wicked, kick-ass show as always. We're going to go through some local and global updates, and then we're going to go to a piece about Sylvia Rivera, a very well-known queer rights activist from back in the day, and stuff about Stonewall as well, so it should be really interesting. And then we're going to finish off with some upcoming events.
We just heard some breaking news. The Freedom Bookshop based in London has just been firebombed. It happened in the early hours of the morning. A source came here from libcom.org and from Twitter, which is quite distressing news to hear about, really. We have a quote here for you as well. Freedom was firebombed last night. No one hurt. Upstairs is okay, but shop and electrics have been seriously damaged. Not much to be done today, but plan for clean-up and appeal for cash, no insurance coverage, sadly, will be getting sorted out ASAP. Thanks to everyone for the kind words, brief answers, and yep, we'll be making an appeal, but soon sorting out what's next at the moment. A few people have asked about cheques. We should be able to get mail, so yes, you can send them. Made out to Freedom Press. Thanks.
Wow, that's pretty bad news, eh? So I think definitely there's going to have to be some lots of fundraising stuff going on for them, and definitely like messages of solidarity and things. That's pretty harsh, given what's going on in the current times and everything.
Yeah, it is very sad. And apparently no one has claimed responsibility for the attack as of yet. If there is any update, I'm sure they'll be able to let us know. But at the moment, we don't know exactly who may have started this, so...
Yeah,
just very shocking news, to be honest with you. It's pretty bad, and we've seen some photos of the damage as well. It looks pretty serious as well, so like it's going to be, they're going to need a lot of help basically. There's also been an update saying that at 1 o'clock tomorrow, which is Saturday the 2nd, the bookshop solidarity cleanup will be commencing, so hopefully there'll be a lot of people there helping out, you know, making sure the place is all nice and looking new, hopefully.
Yeah,
after
yeah.
the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully, many hands make light work, and also, hopefully, folks in London can pitch in to help out.
Yeah, cool. Anyway,
okay. In other news, there's been if some of you may or may not have heard, there's been in Canada over the past couple of months, there's been a massive movement called Idle No More, and it's basically like a Native Indigenous people's solidarity or Indigenous people's rights movement, really. As you may have heard, we reported on this last Radio Cavalè episode, Chief Teresa Spence, who's from Attawapiskat in Canada, or quote-unquote Canada, I guess Turtle Island, last week she ended her 6-week hunger strike, which was in protest of the poor housing conditions in Attawapiskat itself, and also across the country as part of this Native rights movement, and also in protest of the Conservative government's really... crap environmental record and plans for the future in terms of Canada's waterways. There's been there's been Native flash mobs with Native dancing in shopping malls and across the country, mass demonstrations. There's been trains, motorways, and border crossings been blockaded. It's been really, really massive, massive, and I think it's really the spirit and heart of a lot of people have really been in it and really inspired and things, Native and settler folks alike, Native and non-Native alike and things. And it's been endorsed by a wide range of people, sort of minor Canadian celebrities, all kinds of people from different political parties, but also loads of people have voiced with their feet and with their energy and spirit and you know, love and things and solidarity with what's going on. So it's been quite inspiring. And just if you're not aware, in Canada. Canada's often ranked as one of the best countries in the world in which to live. I think like it ranks number 4 or something. But if you look at just the condition of Native peoples in reserves, I recently heard that it ranks about like 78 or 79 in the world of places to live. So you can really see the disparity in the way a lot of Native people are treated as second-class citizens, you know. But clearly that hasn't stopped their fight and spirit, and, you know, it's really something at the minute. So it's worth checking out. For more information, there's always stuff going on. Check out idlenomore.ca. So that's IDLE nomore.ca.
Also, I was going to say, the Idle No More protests have also like gained some popularity across seas as well.
Yeah.
There's been solidarity demonstrations in America. I know this because a couple of my American contacts have been putting up images of people protesting in places like Montana as well. So it's been, you know, it's not just in Canada where people are showing concern for this issue. It's also in the United States as well.
Which is I think people, I think Native peoples and Indigenous peoples from around the world have been inspired and things, rightly so, yeah.
Yeah. Next up on the news items is George Ferguson, our glorious mayor to be. Obviously, he's been doing like what most politicians do in these times and implementing more austerity measures to the city of Bristol. There's been a bulletin here from the Bristol There is a bulletin here from the Bristol and District Anti-Cuts Alliance, and they have a little statement here which I'm more willing to read out. Last night's meeting of Ferguson's cut cabinet was very revealing. As before, his main argument that he didn't want to make the cuts, but the government is making him do it. We had to say loudly that this isn't good enough. He sees the cuts as a distraction from his grand vision for Bristol, but £35 million more cuts to this is £35 million worth of cuts to public services, families, old people, working or not working. These are who the cuts are going to be affecting mostly. Are going to suffer from this. Council staff, trade unions and community groups are uniting to prevent this vandalism. Ferguson also showed his disdain for democracy by dismissing questions and statements from the public at the meetings as a waste of his valuable time. He's looking for ways to reduce public participation in these meetings. We must ensure that this doesn't happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Doesn't take long for the anti-democratic tendencies to come out. Holy Toledo.
Yeah, I've also found out that he's now being paid the same salary as an MP, which is quite an interesting update. I mean, this guy's a rich businessman. He says, well, you know, he's an independent candidate as he when he you know advertised himself as for the mayor elections. But yeah, he's very much a very rich businessman, and yeah, he's been voted in to have, you know, a salary of £65,738. This is going to be the same salary as an MP, which is, you know, quite shocking, really. He's also said that, like, you know, following the vote, he said that he'll pay £12,000 a year into trust fund to help Bristolians affected by the cuts. Mm. I mean, £12,000 a year, I mean, compared to, like, the amount of cuts that he said he's going to bring in, which is £35 million. Yeah, it's going to make a real big difference,
yeah,
isn't
it? Yeah, it's outrageous. Yeah. And think about it, I mean, everybody can do the math. How many years will it take you to make the same amount of money as that guy's going to make in 1 year, you know? I think we can all say that when we do paid work, we all work hard.
Yeah. I mean, if he's bringing in the cuts, I mean, maybe he might want to look at his paycheck first.
You know? Yeah, yeah, totally. He can come down to minimum wage or something, see how it feels.
Yeah, I think I'd appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Wicked. So I'm just going to quickly go to a little piece. Going to read out a statement about some of you may or may not have heard of this. Last week, a court in the Netherlands has ruled that the old oil giant Shell is at least partly responsible for the environmental damage from the oil leaks in the Niger Delta. On Wednesday, a Dutch court ruled Shell must pay compensation to a Nigerian farmer whose land was contaminated by oil pollution from Shell's operation. The ruling was mixed, however, as the court also threw out other complaints. So, this was sort of, people were happy that this one bit was received well, even though the other complaints were thrown out, because there's, as many of you have been aware, like, there's been decades of problems in Nigeria with Shell having to do with the Ogoni people, another, again, indigenous group people there, and Ogoni rights and things, Kensa or Wiwa being executed, I can't remember exactly when, but about a decade ago and things, so it's been part of a massive ongoing thing, so it's one step forwards. I don't know, it's, yeah, but I guess it's something.
Yeah. Another news as well, obviously people might be aware of all the shop closures happening at the moment in the high street stores, HMV being one of the victims in this, including Blockbuster is another recent addition as well, and Jessup's as well. What's interesting about all this is obviously when a store goes to the administration, what normally happens is that the people who are running it are supposed to make sure that all the process of it goes out, so everyone who gets laid off receives compensation for their losses, make sure any like outstanding, you know, payments have to be made to other companies, and make sure all the, you know, basically just make sure everyone gets their fair share from this. Obviously, this hasn't really been the case. I know of one incident happening in Bristol, in Cribbs Causeway, where the administrators or the management went into Jessop's and Cribbs Causeway, told the people to pack up and leave. Just literally, just get out of the shop, basically. The shop's closed, and they haven't been guaranteed any kind of, you know, compensation for their work or for the hours they put in.
Mm-hmm.
There's also been updates in this in Ireland as well, where HMV workers have actually staged sit-in protests because they haven't been paid wages, which is really shocking. Obviously, this is probably going to include wages from the Christmas period, where they would have worked exceedingly long hours and, you know, would have had extremely busy work. So, I mean, let's be honest with you, they are really entitled to what they're earning there. And
then some, yeah.
I mean, definitely, like, you know, I work in retail myself during Christmas period. It's not fun at all.
No, no.
And, you know, I mean, I've been paid for what I've done, and I'm quite glad that I have been, you know. But these guys have not been given, you know, they haven't been guaranteed any wages for their work they've put in. And so they have, as a result, staged in a sit-in protest. Yeah, it says here basically that the Irish division of the chain was put into receivership, more serious than the administration. It's more serious than the administration process, and the accountancy firm Deloitte was appointed to take control of assets of 16 stores, which have all been closed. Mm. You know, about 400 jobs being lost on Ireland. You know, there was an update yesterday saying that 190 jobs will be gone in HMV stores across the UK. That was the updates I've heard in recent news as well. But I think there's going to be a case where a lot more people are going to be walking out of their jobs empty-handed and without even any compensation or any of their wages, which is, you know, quite frankly shocking at the end of the day. I mean, to not work for any money at all is practically slavery.
Well, I think that would be almost a definition, yeah. And I think it's shocking, you know, it's been like, what, 4 or 5 years now since the hit of the, you know, the crisis, as they call it, the credit crunch and all, and it's just like, it hasn't let up yet, and like, it's sort of like, you know, it does make it quite clear that capitalism is the crisis, you know, and not, it's not just a temporary thing, really.
Yeah.
From Bristol Indie Media, BAE Systems, a.k.a., they say, death-dealing warmongers. I wish I had, like, a Star Wars voice. Death-dealing warmongers. have confirmed for the first time their US-funded Argus ultra-high-resolution spy camera has been fitted to its Tyrannus drone that is being used over the UK in cooperation with the police. The BAA Bristol Death Centre confirmed this week that the Avon and Somerset Police were the first police force to be invited to view the security options that the system offers. The Argus camera system is designed to provide the very highest level of resolution, allowing military commanders the ability to target, quote, in parentheses they say, mark for murder, those individuals unable to recognize the democracy that has brought them. However, target those individuals who are unable to recognize what democracy has brought them. This has been brought over them, and news of this war technology is now in the hands of the police, who are presumably are using it to spy on those of an activist mindset. They say, long hair, eating vegan burgers, and take a closer look. Constable, please. And so it's all very worrying. There is no oversight of this technology, and the NATS, the UK air traffic control provider, has also voiced concerns about military and security flights that are happening without their knowledge. For more information on that, check out Bristol Indie Media. So there's also from 325 website, urgent solidarity with Noelia Cotelo from Spain. So they published this on January 28th, saying, in hunger strike from the 8th, of January 2013 in Breva jail in Avila, Spain. Her aim is to go out of Breva's jail and return to her land near her family in Galicia. There's a collection of solidarity signatures online, and it says Noelia is a 25-year-old. She's entered the jail with a sentence of 1.5 years. Today, January 2013, she's marking her 5th year in prison, of many more that could come, unfortunately. During these 5 years, she's borne all kinds of pressures and ill treatments. The institutions have made her life almost impossible for her and her family. On January 8th, she decided to begin an indefinite hunger strike with the support of her friends, relatives, and imprisoned companions in struggle. The life of Noelia is in serious danger. The authorities of the jail in Brievia refuse to provide her with medical attention. We'd like to ask you to read and inform yourselves about her case and to provide us with your signature so that we can fight for Noelia and similar cases of imprisoned persons who suffer from similar realities. We have to finish with the impunity, the law of silence, and the ill treatment and tortures. And also, on a more positive prison-related news, animal rights prisoner Mel Broughton has been released on the... So it says this was published on UK Indie Media. It was published on the 1st of February. It said Mel Broughton has been released after serving 5 years, 1 month, and 15 days of his 10-year sentence for animal rights-related offences against the Oxford University Animal Lab. So, I hope he's having a party and eating some lovely vegan food and sitting back and enjoying himself for a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so from Schnooze, they call it Calais Cops Question Time. So Calais Migrant Solidarity have been collecting evidence against the cops for years. These are the cops in Calais in France. Last year, the material was collated and the resulting correspondence co-signed by many other migrants and human rights associations. It was sent to the Defenders of Human Rights, which is the Defender of Rights, which is the French equivalent of the Human Rights Ombudsman, who undertook an investigation into policing tactics in the migration hotspot, and they produced a highly critical report of police activity. Now, the Ministry of the Interior, which is like the UK Home Office, is working to a 3-month deadline to explain how it's going to implement the recommendations of the report. There's more information about this and probably about the report on the Schnooze website, so check it out if you have a minute. And if you're even more so inclined, go to Calais and...
Well, I mean, Calais always has this kind of problems with the law enforcement, hasn't it, really?
Yeah.
I mean, there's always been a lot of harassment of migrants down there, and even for people who support migrants themselves as well, so it's definitely something to, like, show support for and try and get, you know. On a related note as well, there was a similar kind of action being done down here in Bristol last week as well. You had a group of migrants and migrant support workers out... in a sit-in protest, as it were. They were camped outside the Bristol City Council building on a Monday night to kind of show their, show people what destitution is like, basically, you know, being out in the cold, you know, with nothing, as a result of these kind of implementations by the council to try and make life for migrants a lot more difficult.
God, yeah.
Yeah. They did, the next day, they also lobbied the council as well. There's a lot more information about this on the Asylum Seekers in Bristol .blogspot.co.uk. There's a lot of interesting information about, like, how people were, people's experiences of the moment was. This one here says, like, it was a really beautiful and positive night. It goes on to say, I have to say, Monday evening and all the night and the day after was really beautiful and full of positive feeling and love. Thanks to people who brought food, drinks and instruments to play music. This was lovely, and even to people who just stayed for a few minutes. Congratulations to all of them. And I must also say, all this happened is because what we've done in the past year and different places and events, and little by little, we have to go forward and challenge and force the central government to change the unjust law for asylum seekers. I think it's really, it was really positive. I went down there myself to have a look at it, and, you know, people were together, people were talking. It was really fantastic, you know.
Yeah, I've always been really impressed by, if you go to Bristol Refugee Rights, the drop-in there, it's really lovely atmosphere, and I think it's, and just talk to folks who are going through that, the system, and, you know, they're dealing with a lot of stress and a lot of difficult situations, but they manage to maintain a sort of a lovely, lovely, beautiful character and energy that comes out, you know, and so I've been quite impressed, you know, in the march that they did from Bristol into town and stuff like that. It's fantastic, really.
I was there myself for that one. That was a really good one. I went outside Trinity Station as well to kind of protest against, like, the mistreatment of migrants by the police as well.
And the signing thing, when they have to go and sign as well at the police station, they don't know if they might get detained or not, you know, so it's quite stressful, really.
Yeah. I mean, there's a good description here. I mean, what they say, what is destitution? And I'll read this one out as well. It says, we all know the central and local government know asylum seekers' problems, but we went there to campaign and sleep outside in the freezing weather to make it visible to the public, and to say that we're not poor and didn't come here because of money or to find a better job. We fled from our country and left behind our family and friends and possessions just to be safe. But this government disbelieves us and doesn't treat us as humans and has left us in limbo. We want to change the unjust laws for asylum seekers. Being destitute and not stable is not only about food or no place to stay. It causes other problems, like intellectual problems and depression and mental health problems. It makes people lonely and unable to be a part of society. You know, this is...
Yeah, it's quite a good account, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really just quite upsetting really to hear about this. So.
Yeah, definitely. In other news, again from Schnooze, this is something I haven't followed too closely, but it feels like it's something that's quite important to talk about. So So Schnooze said the Coombhaven eviction. It took 3 days and a huge security operation to evict the last of 3 camps on the route to Bexhill Bypass this week. The eviction had been delayed by over a week because of the snow. Campers used the extra time to build more defences, including a tunnel, barricade and nets in the trees. Everything pointed towards the eviction starting on Monday, so Sunday saw hordes of people arrive from all around the country. This included the chief executives of Greenpeace, Friends of the Earth, the Wildlife Trust, and the Campaign for the Protection of Rural England. Around 40 people stayed, none of these are chief executives, alas, overnight to greet the share group bailiffs in the morning. So they arrived on Monday morning and spent the whole day at ground level. They set up fencing, cleared protesters from the site, and then had to cut 5 people out of lock-ons as well as investigate and fill in the flooded tunnel. The weather got really wet and windy overnight. Some people in the trees had no shelter. The weather didn't improve in the morning, and some people were pretty glad the climbing bailiffs started evicting nets, walkways, and even the concrete lock-ons and treehouses. Quite a few people agreed to be taken down, which meant they weren't arrested, even though it took just as long for the climbers. At the end of the day, there were still 2 treehouses and 5 protesters left for another night. Supporters tried to deliver food, water, blanket, but the bailiffs were employing siege tactics and refused to allow assistance in at all. Protesters suffered from the cold conditions and limited supplies. Some supplies managed to get through eventually, but more because of the general overweightedness and age of the security guards rather than their goodwill and kindness. And so they go on to talk about the rest of that. However, they end the article by saying that, by quoting one of the protesters, saying more roads means more road protests. So it's, I guess, watch this space and see what happens.
We're going to go for a classic song that everyone knows, Ghost Town, The Specials. No need to explain what this is all about, so
yeah.
Have a listen.
Totally, cool. Wow, great. So as Mitchell, one of our former presenters, would say, what a tune. I can't quite do an Aussie accent, but I think you know what I'm saying. Get out. What a tune. Indeed. Anyways, so that was the Specials, Ghost Town. And now I composed a sort of radio piece, a bit of a audio history kind of thing about Sylvia Rivera and the Stonewall Riots and things from back in the day. And it's a bit of an homage to Sylvia Rivera, who I guess I started reading about her and how amazing she was, because I started hearing about her name and things. And I started to hear her name, so I started to look into her, and she was... she's a trans activist, tough fighter. She had a tough life, but she's one tough mama, as they say. And so she, she's a trans woman from, I believe she's from New York City. And she, essentially she was a part of the emergent, like, trans rights, gay liberation movement and things. So you'll hear a bit about her history in this, about her childhood, about struggles, and also about... sort of some of the struggles that she had within the Pride movement and things as well, and also about the Stonewall Riots and what that meant to people at the time. So I tried to use sort of people's clips from the time, so if some things don't totally make sense to you, it's maybe just a good reason to do a bit more research into it and find out more, and check it out and see what she's all about. And she's inspiring woman.
Chelsea had told us about Sylvia Rivera and how she had this housing for trans street people or just queer street people in the early 70s. We sort of began to see ourselves a little bit in that model. And then lo and behold, Sylvia Rivera showed up and started to come over to visit us. And she was like, oh, wow, you people are doing what I always dreamed of doing. So Sylvia was there, and then Sylvia started to get back into politics because we, in effect, provided sort of a support for Sylvia that she really had never had. She really started to roll then as a political leader, resurrected.
Recording Sylvia Rivera. Original name, Ray Rivera Mendoza. I was born in 1951. I had a mother and I had a father. In 1953, my mother decided to try to off herself. At the same time, she tried to kill me. She knew I was going to have a very hard life. And yes, I've had a very hard struggle. I tell these stories of my life because I know that my children, in later years, my transgender community will understand. We have to stand up and speak for ourselves. We have to fight for ourselves. We saved their lives. We were the frontliners of the so-called 1969 rebellion of the Stonewall. I don't know how long I'm going to be around, but I wanted to be told the way I feel.
Sylvia and I talked about it when she was in the hospital, and really neither one of us could come up with why we, of all people, stayed friends for 33 years. I've always said we were the oddest of odd couples, because I was in my 40s at that time. Sylvia was 19. Sylvia was basically a Puerto Rican street drag queen. We didn't have transgendered people in those days. I was a WASP who had come out of the establishment. Stonewall was peculiar. It meant many things to many people. Here was a riot, and here, for the first time, well, first time any of us was seeing gays fight back. I think one of the things that impressed Sylvia most was the the line of street kids doing the Rockette, We Are the Stonewall Girls, because I mean, this was in total defiance. This was getting out and saying to the world, to the police, to everybody, I'm a little faggot, and it was, We Are the Stonewall Girls, we wear our hair in curls, we don't wear underwear, we show our pubic hair. It certainly was the turning point in the life of Sylvia Rivera.
The one aspect of Sylvia's activism going all the way back to 1970 in Star House was the specific issue of dealing with the homeless transgender population. And
Star House came out of the organization STAR, which stood for Street Transvestite Action Revolutionaries, and it was the brainstorm of Sylvia, Marsha P. Johnson, and Bubbles Rose Lee.
Marsha and Sylvia got a hold of this building, and they were using it, it's sort of the model for Transy House here, in fact, as a kind of collective place for the trans girls that were out living on the street, you know, homeless. Marsha and Sylvia mothered them. I mean, they mothered everybody, so I considered Sylvia to be my mother. Everybody in this house called her Ma. I mean, she was that's what she was.
Sylvia left the movement after the first three or four years, because in this very park she had been refused the right to speak, and it was right here with the rally after one of the Pride marches.
It was like the fourth anniversary gay march when I was beat up on stage.
Y'all better quiet down.
What the bullshit?
Sylvia did grab the mic and speak, and she roared,
"Revolution now! Give me a G! Give me an A! Give me a Y! Give me a P! Give me an O! Give me a W! Give me an E! Give me an R!
I have never seen anyone so lost. I mean, Sylvia's world had suddenly just collapsed. And Sylvia left the movement for 20 years.
You mean this is, you're addressing the whole Pride parade?
Yes. That was a lot.
How many people were in front of you?
500,000. Yeah, we could say that because it was, you could hear me everywhere. I tell them very nicely to remember that they wouldn't be having gay world pride in Italy if it wasn't for the transgender that fought in 1969 at the Stonewall. And they went crazy. At one point in between my speech, they started calling me a living myth in Italian. mystical or something, mm-hmm. And the crowds just kept on hollering that, and it was like, really, I'll never get that respect here.
We're the Stonewall Girls, we wear our hair in curls,
we wear our dungarees above our nelly knees. When it comes to boys, we merely hypnotize.
The Stonewall Bar, to me, is a terrible place where something great happened.
There's so many romantic myths about Stonewall, particularly in the media. I'd like to say a couple of actual things, which are Judy Garland had nothing to do with it.
Right.
There's a lot written and a lot of myth and a lot of plays being done that says that Judy Garland was because of Judy Garland.
She died the day before or something.
She was buried that morning.
Only 47 when she came to the end of her yellow brick road. Her tragic saga over, she is at peace at last.
On June 28, 1969, a riot broke out at the Stonewall Bar in Greenwich Village. The gay patrons, who were used to raids on bars where they chose to meet, decided if they wouldn't take it anymore. Men in dresses kicked up their heels as lesbians and others threw bricks and coins at the police. After 5 days of riots, a modern gay rights movement was born.
In many states, people could be incarcerated as a sexual psychopath the minute it was known you were homosexual.
You had no legitimate right to really even exist as gay people.
So there was no place where you could be sure at the beginning of the night that you wouldn't suffer an attack during the night. During that period, beating up gays was a national sport.
It was actually against the law to serve an open homosexual at a bar. It was against the law.
Gay New Yorkers could at least gather at the Stonewall Inn.
It was a seedy bar. It was run by the mafia. They only opened it to make money for off of gay people, to exploit gay people.
It was the best bar at the time. And because you could dance, the music was great. We just didn't have things like that.
The bar was dirty, it was unpleasant. The
jukebox was great. And the drag queens controlled that.
Police raids on Stonewall were often and routine.
The lights would turn off or turn on or turn their colors when the police were about to arrive, and all the patrons knew that at that point, when that red light or that white light went on, people were to stop dancing, assume heterosexual, as best they could, roles, and when the police came in, pretend it was just another Irish pub. That was what Stonewall was like. Not pretty, not nice.
Until one night.
That pathetic little blouse don't say man to me. Bust a little Jody.
Helen, honey. Woo!
Wearing the legal minimum requirement of 3 items of clothing appropriate their gender as prescribed by nature.
The transvestites, the drag queens, made fun of the police, and the police acted like police were supposed to act in movies. They were big, tough guys, and they were going to push around the girls. The girls were the men in dresses. Not fully dressed as women, because it was against the law. You had to wear some items of male apparel, or if you were a female in male garments, you had to wear some items of female apparel. And that was one of the ways the police would harass the cross-dressers.
On Friday night, June 27, 1969, the New York police force pulled off its biggest raid ever on the Stonewall Inn. They immediately ran into resistance from the transvestites, who were mouthing off to them, saying things like, "I have my civil rights too, don't touch me, get your hands off me."
A friend called Jerry to tell him about the raid.
His exact words were, "Miss Hughes is right at Stonewall, get down here right now."
The angry crowd pelted the police with bottles and rocks.
And as we kept pushing them backwards, they were laughing nervously. But it seemed to get more serious, and we pushed them back into the bar.
The police were stunned. I mean, those were the riot police at a gay bar, unheard of.
There were thousands of people involved out in the streets opposing the police. Nothing like that had ever happened before.
And then this one queen, Miss New Orleans, was very skinny. She was so outraged, she started grabbing a meter and almost single-handedly tore the meter out of the street. And then these queens used it as a battering ram. This is what shocked me. And I said, "My God."
The definitive turning point came when a lesbian had been inside the bar and was being roughed up by the police as they took her out of the bar into a patrol wagon. She also said to the onlooker, she says, "Why don't you guys do something?"
And then everything went crazy.
The crowd erupted into an on-again, off-again fight against the cops.
I got there about an hour after it started. The scene that I was focused on, which I'll never forget, was the famous line where all the drag queens were doing a Rockettes kick line, singing, "We are the Stonewall girls, we wear our hair in curls.
We wear our dungarees above our Nelly knees. When it comes to boys, we merely hypnotize." And that's when that was enough of them. The cops just got us.
Well, I said to myself, heaven has arrived.
The thing that was going through my head was good. Finally, why not?
I spent the whole rest of the night throwing rocks and making lame attempts at turning over cars, and it's a ball.
These were our sisters. They were all fighting, and I couldn't walk away. I didn't want to walk away.
I remember it being fabulous, or as I say, fabulous.
Gay sport back then, I think, because of a string of assaults, it was building up.
It was the first time that most of us actually got to vent our anger. If it had just been those nights of rioting and outrage, and nothing followed it, nothing would have changed.
The first gay rights organizations were created after Stonewall.
A lot of people dismissed it as, you know, just another bar raid. Others immediately saw the significance, and in fact, within days of the riots, the Gay Liberation Front was formed.
People to stick up for themselves and say, I'm gay, whether you like it or not. It's increasingly easier in the metropolitan areas, in the big cities.
We put on dances that were by and for the gay community. We built up a huge treasury. It was used to start the first gay community center.
A year after the riots, the group marked the occasion with a march.
We decided that the march should start around Stonewall on Christopher Street and march up to Central Park. We had threats. We were scared. We often refer to it as the first run, because we went so fast. By the time that we got to the park and I turned around, it was unbelievable. It was one of the great moments of my life. I get chills just thinking about it, because in 1 year, we went from a bunch of hidden people who fought back one night in the dark to thousands of people marching in the sunlight into Central Park as proud, openly gay and lesbian people. When I die, that'll be one of the things I'm going to remember most.
So that was Sylvia Rivera, and as you may have noticed at the end of that piece, they talk about how fantastic it is that they're going to start having gay pride parades. And then, as you may note, as you flip back to, if you remember the beginning of the piece where they said they kicked her off the stage at one of the third or fourth gay pride parade in New York City, but then she later went on to be invited to Italy to speak at pride parades and things. So she has. Her voice has resonated far past.
Why was she kicked out of the Pride Parade then, in the first place?
It wasn't clear. The video clip that I saw, just maybe she was... It wasn't clear, but the video clip I saw of it was just that they weren't quite cool with having her on the stage, it didn't look like, you know? I don't know.
Was it because perhaps she's more militant than, say, other activists who were speaking there, perhaps?
It could possibly be, yeah. And I think after that, as the sort of audio clips imply, her life, one of her close partner, well, her partner died, and, you know, her life sort of took a downturn after that point, but then she, how do you say, her community sort of supported her, she got back on her feet, you know, she started then organizing and being quite militant again, and, or, you know, just organizing and supporting other trans folks and things, so, yeah.
I think, like, the whole Stonewall incident was a very important important moment in history. Particularly for LGBT issues as well, because mm-hmm. it was just like many others beforehand, it was just like, we've had enough, like, mm-hmm. piss off and leave us alone. Basically, we have the right to be who we are. If you don't like it, fuck off.
yeah, exactly.
I mean, I you know. Mm-hmm. Total support for that in the day,
yeah. Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, exactly. And I think it's like, for me personally, coming from North America and seeing the, how do you say, like, compared to here, there's loads more homeless people and things in the streets, and often, you know, like, trans folks and trans youth will have a much harder time, you know. And so the fact that, you know, she knew that, like, we need to organize community houses and safe spaces to help, you know, help basically protect and provide a shelter and home for other people, like, it's fantastic and things. So this is really something that I admire, you know, and these are key issues for people, really. And I think some of the stuff that, you know, you get from community houses and things like that, are the kinds of things that you get from squatting over here. So it's why these community spaces, you know, and why this mutual support in our communities are so important to us. But especially as trans folks, they face a whole other range of struggles that,
yeah,
at least for, you know, people who sort of maybe, you know, a lot of other folks don't face the same way, let's put it that way,
yeah,
and things.
I think what's sad about it is that, I mean, I'm guessing some things have changed, but there still is a struggle going on, isn't there, really?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
there is,
yeah,
still that kind of transphobia kind of attitude, mm-hmm. resonating around, like, particularly around, I know it exists, mm-hmm. in England, and I'm pretty sure it's still around in North America as well, so it still exists, you know, and it's something that we do need to challenge, I think, so.
Definitely, and to be aware of as well, you know, and just sort of, just be, you know, yeah, exactly. We need to challenge, we need to celebrate people's identities and everything as well. I think it's fantastic. People are so courageous, so, yeah, definitely.
Should we next song then, shall we?
Yeah, okay, so,
The next song, it's from not really kind of anything political, it's just a kind of, it's a musician, DJ called Bonobo. He's got some really, I really like his music personally, so that's why I chose to put him on. He's got a new album coming out soon, and this is one of the songs from his new album coming up soon. It's called Cirrus. Hope you enjoy it. Thank you. Okay, and we're back. Okay, now we're part of the show where we're discussing upcoming events for the month ahead. So, would you like to start off?
Yeah, please. So, no reason to stay home, even though it's the middle of the winter and long, cold days. Meet your friends in nice, warm places. Bristol Indie Media and Permanent Culture Now and Bristol Radical Film Festival present This Land Is Monday, February 4th at 8 p.m. at the Cube Cinema. And entries £3 or £4, but nobody's turned away for lack of funds. For more than three decades, transnational corporations have been busy buying up what used to be known as the commons, everything from our forests and oceans to our broadcast airwaves and most important intellectual and cultural works. In This Land Is Our Land, acclaimed author David Bollier, a leading figure in the global movement to reclaim the commons, bucks the rising tide of anti-government extremism and free market ideology to show how commercial interests are undermining our collective interests, placing the commons squarely within the American tradition of community engagement and the free exchange of ideas and information. Bollier shows how a bold new international movement steeped in democratic principles is trying to reclaim our commonwealth by modeling practical alternatives to the restrictive monopoly powers of corporate elites. The film will be followed by talks and discussion on the current rising global commons movement, and there's sort of links for more information.
Excellent. Yeah, the related link, if you're interested, if you go to www.permanentculturenow.com, I'm sure the more information will be available on there. Quite a good site anyway, there's a lot of stuff to be shown on there. Next up for the list of events to be shown is the monthly Prisoner Letter and Writing Evening, which is every first Thursday of the month at Cabelli. Really good evening. If you're interested, come on down. Basically, the night is it starts at 6:30. There's food to be shared as well. I think this month they're going to be doing Greek food, which would be quite nice to have. Basically come down, take a look and see what's it's all about. Most of it's like letter writing, so like if they'll give you a list of, you know, prisoners' names and for what reasons they're in inside for, and if you're interested, take some time out, you know, write a letter to them, show some support and solidarity, and we'll take care of the rest, as it were. Really, that's what kind of happens down there, doesn't it?
So yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's a great opportunity to get to be in touch with different folks.
Yeah, I mean, I've written a few letters myself to prisoners. You know, it's quite nice to get letters back from them as well. You know, to see how they're doing and stuff. Though every time I send letters, they get released immediately. So,
so you're a good luck charm, really.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah.
We need to put you to work more.
Come on down. It'll be at Cabelli, 6:30 in the evening. That's 14 Robertson Road, Eastern, BS5 6JY.
Wonderful, fantastic. And so so Boycott Israeli Goods Day of Action. Saturday, 9th of February, Boycott Israeli Goods. From 12 till 3, street stalls and boycott action outside Sainsbury's, junction with Zetland Road, number 2 to 4 Gloucester Road in Bristol. This is the second European-wide day of action against agricultural trade with Israel and the launch of a campaign calling on Sainsbury's to end trade with Israel, with Israeli agricultural produce export. There's more information on boycottisraelnetwork.net, and also it's organized by the Bristol Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and if you go on to Bristol Indie Media, you can see how to join their email discussion if you want to find out more information.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. Yeah, so the boycott's still going on, is it though? Like, you know, they're still trying to get the boycott going, which is, you know, pretty interesting, because, like, you know, I mean, you can understand, like, you know, it's a very serious situation over there and stuff, and what people don't realise is quite a lot of products you buy are Israeli goods, but you don't know, they're not actually made in Israel, they're actually made in the homes of Palestinian people, and they lose their homes and stuff, so it's a very important issue, I think.
Yeah.
Next up on the list. Okay, the next event that's going to be happening is on the 10th of February 2013. It's the Cardiff Migrant Solidarity. It's kind of a training training thing by the looks of this. I'll read it out to you. Cardiff Migrant Solidarity Training Part 1 is now on February the 10th, 2013. CMS Wales is kicking off 2013 with a series of sessions aimed at helping new volunteers to understand the asylum process, how we can help refugees and migrants living in South Wales, and what we have found from the work we have done so far. Part 1 will look at the asylum process of England and Wales and what can happen when people claim asylum. Also, we hope to look at the role of the UKBA in people's asylum claims and how we can offer initial asylum information to help people know what to expect when going for interviews or signing at the Home Office. Our training sessions are mostly aimed at people who are interested in working with Cardiff Migrant Solidarity in Cardiff and or across South Wales, but this is not a necessity. And our sessions will be an open exercise in the world of migrant support, available to anyone, no matter how much or little interest you have in CMS as a group. Other discussions will include legal situation for refugees, detainee support, and ideas for practical solidarity. If you're interested, the venue for the place will be the Hungry Planet Whole Foods Shop and Community Cafe at 142 Clifton Street, which is in Cardiff. CF241LY, that's the postcode if you're trying to look for it on Google Maps. All are welcome. Expect those who work against migrants, such as UKBA.
Yeah, I think they're expecting people from the UKBA or to try and come and interfere with the training.
But yeah, hopefully not.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, you can also email them as well, cardiffsolidarity@riseup.net, if you're interested in attending as well.
Cool, so sounds quite interesting and useful, really.
Definitely, yeah.
Great, and so last but not least, public meeting on fracking. Is Shepton Mallet at risk of fracking? So it's happening Wednesday, 13th of February, from 7 till 9 p.m. It's at the Mendip, District Council Chambers in Kennards Grave, on Kennards Grave Road, BA45BT. Speakers and a question-answer session on what is hydraulic fracking, coal bed methane, unconventional gas drilling, and what are the potential risks to our communities. So this sounds quite interesting and also quite important. Shepton Mallet is an area covered by the Petroleum Exploration and Development License, PEDL, and these licenses are sold by the government to companies wishing to drill for unconventional gas. This puts our local area at risk of water and air pollution. They're also dangerous to human and animal health. So people are invited to come along to find out more about the science, the drilling methods, and the possible impacts of unconventional gas drilling on their family and community. It's organized by Frack Free Somerset and Transition Shepton. So for more information, I think you can go to the transitionnetwork.org /initiatives/Shepton, or there's a number on Bristol Indie Media that you can call, and also a related link is Frack Free Somerset. So we've talked about fracking a bit on Kibeli before, and clearly it's quite an important issue. I mean, all of the issues we talk about are quite important. Fracking, as you probably know, is something that's used quite widely across the United States now. Many people, you don't hear about the negative impacts because they sign deals with companies after they get boatloads of money given to them, to not talk about the negative health and environmental consequences of what's happened on their land following subsequent to fracking. It's something they've started doing here. I can't remember what part of the UK it was, but it caused two small tremblements de terre. Earthquakes. Caused two small earthquakes in the UK previously, which caused Quadrilla, the company, to have stopped fracking for a short while. They've started up again, and fracking seems to be spreading to other parts. However, as many people who have looked at a map of the world before will realize, that the UK is puny and small compared to the United States, and so it's not going to be happening in just one person's yard. It's going to be happening in pretty much just about everybody's backyard.
I mean, this could affect Bristol in some ways as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, there's been, like, you know, incidents. I mean, I've seen this kind of stuff on the internet and stuff, where people have shown videos of people literally setting fire to kitchen sinks because the water's contaminated with gas. It's quite amazing. I mean, like, it's like, can't believe a thing like that could actually happen, but it's just there, like, and the flames are up, and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, it's intense, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sure has it been responsible for many deaths as well? Like,
well, it's hard to, they haven't, there's quite a lot of stuff that they keep hidden. Like, there's sort of like a secret, you know, Colonel Saunders has his secret sauce ingredients. They have like a secret sauce that they use for fracking, and so you don't actually know what they're putting down, down into the fracking wells and things. So I think, and as many people have been bought off and paid off by fracking companies, they don't know essentially they don't know. It's been impossible to study it. There have been studies on sort of animal populations that live close to fracking sites and have found, there's some studies on the internet that you can find that are sort of quite reliable scientific studies, peer-reviewed and everything, that have found higher mortality rates of cows and things that have been exposed to fracking fluids, sort of groundwater coming up that has been contaminated and the subsequent air pollution and things. So, dangerous.
Yeah, it sounds really dangerous anyway. It just sounds like a stupidly insane idea, and it's just a way of trying to squeeze profit, isn't it, really? So
yeah, exactly. Definitely. And on that positive note, that's it for our show today, I think.
That's it. I think there's a bit of a short show today, not so much in there today as normal, but hopefully next time we'll have a bit more. I guess we can leave you with a song now. We thought we'll leave you with KRS-One, The Sound of the Police. I'm Achilles Punks.
And I'm Santeria.
And I hope you've enjoyed the show.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound. Overseer, overseer. sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast.